Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast about intelligent design and evolution.
Greetings and welcome to ID the Future. I'm Casey Luskin, broadcasting with Discovery Institute, Center for Science and Culture. And today we have on the show with us again Dr. Donald L. Ewart, a research immunologist and virologist who spent a good portion of his career studying the molecular and cell biology of the immune system. Dr. Ewart received his PhD from the University of Georgia in 1976, and as a microbiologist, he operated a research lab at the Wistar Institute for almost 20 years. His research has been supported by the NIH, the NSF, and the Department of Agricultural Grants, and has involved the immune system, viruses, and cellular biology. So, Dr. Ewart, thanks for coming back on the show with us today.
Glad to be here.
Well, one topic that I've really been wanting to talk to you for a long time about, Dr. Ewart, is the Kitzmühler versus Dover trial and how it dealt with the question of the evolution of the immune system. And I think this is an important topic for our listeners. Although the Dover trial obviously took place about 5 years ago in the fall of 2005, and the ruling came out in December of 2005, this is still a topic that has influenced the way some people view intelligent design if you're inclined to trust federal judges to decide scientific questions for you. And in particular, we've been acutely aware at Discovery Institute how many issues and scientific questions Judge Jones simply got wrong in his ruling. And in particular, one of the most egregious was probably, I would say, the immune system. And that's exactly why I've been wanting to talk to you about this matter for a while, Dr. Ewart, because you and a number of ID-friendly immunologists that I've spoken with have said that the Kitzmühler versus Dover trial was really an exercise in courtroom theatrics and not any kind of a serious investigation of whether the immune system could evolve by Darwinian evolution. So I was wondering if you could first talk to us about basically what happened at the Dover trial with the immune system, and starting off with just sort of telling us some background about what the literature says on the topic of the evolution of the immune system.
Well, I would agree with you, Casey, that the immune system was the centerpiece of the plaintiff's evidence against intelligent design. The immune system has been thrust into the spotlight of public debate over the teaching of intelligent design, and the focus of that attention began in earnest at the Kitzmühler versus Dover Board of Education trial. And we need to review some of the discourse at the trial to really see how, in my view, scientific evidence is often used to not enlighten but purely persuade and can cause some very damaging effects, I think. You'll recall at the trial, a professor of biochemistry at Lehigh University, Michael Behe, was the key witness for the defense. He was questioned about a statement he had made in his book, Darwin's Black Box, in which he claimed that, and I'm quoting, I think it's here, it's page 138. He says, "We can look high or we can look low in books or in journals, but the result is the same. The scientific literature has no answers to the question of the origin of the immune system." And then continuing on, and I think it's page 139, he states, describing the immune system of vertebrates, quoting, "Diversity, recognition, destruction, toleration, all of these and more interact with each other. Whichever way we turn, a gradualistic account of the immune system is blocked by multiple interwoven requirements. If we yearn to understand how this magnificent system came to be, but the complexity of the system dooms all Darwinian explanations to frustration," end quote. Later in the trial, after being presented a pile of about 58 peer-reviewed publications, 9 books, and several immunology textbooks, which the plaintiff's attorney stated were about evolution of the immune system, Behe responds, quote, "They're wonderful articles. They simply just don't address the question that I posed," unquote. Well, in the end, Judge Jones was persuaded by the key witness for the plaintiff, Kenneth Miller, that the plaintiff had in fact presented peer-reviewed studies that refuted a claim made by the witness for the defense that the literature has no answer to the question of the origin of the immune system. In fact, Judge Jones notes in his ruling, quoting, "Dr. Miller presented peer-reviewed studies refuting Professor Behe's claim that the immune system was irreducibly complex." And then he states, an interesting statement I think we'll get to later, but between 1996 and 2002, various studies confirmed each element of the evolutionary hypothesis explaining the origin of the immune system. And going on, he states, "In fact, on cross-examination, Professor Behe was questioned concerning his 1996 claim that science would never find an evolutionary explanation for the immune system. He was presented with 58 peer-reviewed publications, 9 books, and several immunology textbooks about evolution. However, he simply insisted that there was not sufficient evidence of evolution, that it was not good enough. End quote from Judge Jones. Those statements at the trial have ignited a firestorm of responses, primarily from defenders of Darwinism, not necessarily from the principal researchers in comparative immunology. And so the really real question that needs to be addressed is, does the peer-reviewed scientific literature provide an answer to the origin of the immune system? From my background over 30-plus years, from the time I was a postdoc studying comparative immunology, I've continued to follow the literature in the field. And I confirm that Behe was correct. In fact, in his statement, the literature has no answer to the origin of the immune system, only speculation. So what about the literature that is purported to deal with evolution in the immune system? There are basically two types of reports that you find, research reports and review articles. Almost all the research reports deal with how the immune systems of different organisms are put together and function, and do not deal with their origins, that is, whether they evolved or not. The literature that deals with the immune systems of different species other than humans is generally categorized as comparative immunology. The leading journal in this field is Developmental and Comparative Immunology, and as an assistant editor for this journal for several years, I actively reviewed manuscripts submitted for publication that dealt with immune systems of other species. I also published research papers that dealt with aspects of the chicken immune system. And you'll find as you read these papers, it is apparent that almost all of them deal with description and comparisons of immune systems of living species. They're concerned with the components of the different immune systems, how they work, not how they evolved. I think it's fair to say that almost all the literature on comparative studies are descriptive of existing systems. The authors of these research reports may give tacit assent to Darwinian evolution by using descriptive terms such as homologous or evolutionary derived, but most of the papers don't even deal with how that could have taken place. When I wrote a paper, actually in my own experience, describing the class 2 major histocompatibility antigens in the chicken, I was encouraged by a co-author to use terms such as homologous, which implied that these antigens were related to those of humans and mice. I did not think it was justified by my research because it required making assumptions I could not support. It would have been purely speculative and not representative of the actual work that I had done. But nevertheless, that happens all the time. The vast majority of the research on comparative immunology, however, is descriptive of immune systems of living organisms and does not deal with the evolution. The second type of articles are review articles on evolution of the immune system. However, they have a stated agenda. That is, their aim is to develop some evolutionary scenario from the information provided by the basic research reports of actually the scientists who are doing the work. Most of the articles presented at the Dover trial were review articles. They reviewed other people's work. In some of the case, it might have been the author's own work, but tried in the review article to bring all of that work together and try to develop some evolutionary scenario. Shortly after the trial, those papers were posted on the National Center for Science Education website, so it's easy, anybody can go there and look at these papers and understand what I'm talking about. The question is, what level of proof do the reviewers provide? Now, in reality, looking at some of the review articles, you can see that some are purely descriptive, comparing the structures, genetic, and functional components of immune systems of different organisms. Little, if any, attempt is made to develop a pathway by which the different systems may have transition from one to another. However, some of the articles make an attempt to develop an evolutionary scenario. The fundamental assumption that one finds in all of these scenarios is that similarity, that is homology, is proof of a relationship. And that's really the question. Is homology a proof of a relationship? Just because I find that the structure of the antibody receptor places that in a class of proteins called the immunoglobulin superfamily, and we find these distributed through other species, is that proof that they actually evolved one from the other? Similarity is basically circumstantial evidence for some relationship, but it does not define what that relationship is. one can easily see how a common ancestor, which is generally what is invoked to explain similarity in structures, can equally be replaced by a common designer who used similar structures in different organisms to perform similar functions. So in and of itself, homology or similarity is not proof of evolutionary relationship. So the scenarios that are developed in these review articles are basically ones that try to use the evidence of homology as a justification for developing some kind of pathway for which there is no empirical evidence. One of my main criticisms of these scenarios is that they are based on comparisons of components of the immune system and didn't deal with the complexity of the systems in which the components are actually integrated. The immune systems of each organism really amounts to a hierarchical matrix of integrated components that is regulated at multiple levels. Pointing out similarities at the structural level does not address the origin of the system in which the components are integrated. The origin of the adaptive immune system of vertebrates is a major problem. It's been characterized as the Big Bang of immunology, and when you look at the complexity of that system, it's almost beyond the grasp of any evolutionary system putting it in that short period of time, even if you start with some of the components already in other species. But I believe the literature on comparative immunology coupled with findings of systems biology provides ample evidence for intelligent design. As a scientist, I am obligated to follow the evidence where it leads and to seek appropriate causes that fit the available evidence, not the other way around. If the only things I find of similar complexity are made by intelligent beings, it would be dishonest not to consider intelligence as a likely cause of the immune system. And I think the Darwinian model is becoming less tenable as research in systems biology is revealing the hierarchical matrical structure of biological systems. The closest thing that I have found that these systems are analogous to would be the control systems found on a man-made machine like the Boeing 777. I think one of the problems with a non-scientist or someone outside the field reading the review articles as was presented at the Dover trial is that facts and opinion are often intermingled. I think most of us are aware of the difference between the reporting of current events and commentary about the events. However, when we read or listen to reports, it is often difficult to tell the difference between the commentary and the actual reporting of the event. It is the same with reporting of research data. Speculations about evolutionary significance of data are often linked and intermingled with reports of the findings themselves. I'd say in conclusion, with reference to the literature that was presented at Dover, there's a lack of reasonable proof that the immune systems has been derived by a Darwinian mechanism. I think Behe was justified in his statement. The literature has no good answer for the origin of the immune system.
Dr. Ewer, certainly that goes against, I think, some of the ideas and the perceptions that have been put forth by the Darwin lobby. They've tried to say that the origin of the immune system has been thoroughly explained, and that Behe was simply ignoring the literature when he claimed that the literature did not have an explanation. And it's very interesting to hear your perspective as a PhD scientist, an immunologist, who has spent a lot of time studying this very topic of the evolution of the immune system. I'd like to turn now to Judge Jones's ruling and ask you, what did he base his decision on, and was his decision accurate?
Well, you know, as I read the transcripts of the trial and the accounts from other sources, including Kenneth Miller's book, Only a Theory, I realize what a masterful feat of courtroom deception was perpetrated at Dover. I have breakfast with lawyers, and I know they pride themselves in these kinds of things as long as the outcome is in their favor. I think the deception was really at two levels. As noted already, a pile of 58 papers was dramatically dropped on a courtroom table as if they were proof that they provided evidence of the evolution of the immune system. However, even 5 years later, today, and hundreds of additional publications on the immune system, the origin of the vertebrate immune system remains an enigma. What is even more interesting is the sleight of hand Kenneth Miller pulled, which may not have been intentional, but nevertheless was very effective. Remember, Behe stated in Darwin's Black Box, and I'll just quote it again, it's clear what happened here. Whichever way we turn, a gradualistic account of the immune system is blocked by multiple interwoven requirements. As scientists, we yearn to understand how this magnificent system came to be, but the complexity of the system dooms all Darwinian explanations to frustration. Well, Miller took the use of the term system out of context. Instead of referring to the entire immune system as Behe had, Miller used it to refer to only a single component, that is, the machinery that does the rearranging of the immunoglobulin gene segments to produce an antigen receptor on the B and T lymphocytes. This genetic complex is called the RAG1, RAG2 complex. He proceeds then to show how researchers over a decade have empirically demonstrated that structural and functional components of the RAG complex are similar to transposable elements that cut and paste DNA segments in bacteria. And he uses this as if it's a great success for Darwinian evolution. And to quote him, he testified that 10 years of research have proven that Darwinian explanations of that system have been abundantly successful. Well, no such thing happened. Essentially, researchers based on comparative studies had cataloged the RAG genes as belonging to a class of elements called transposons. They did this by sequence analysis and comparisons between the RAG genes and invertebrates with transposable elements. This research did not tell us how the genes got into the vertebrates, therefore was not based on a Darwinian mechanism of evolution. In fact, to this date, despite extensive searches of sequence databases, an autonomous transposon comparable to the RAG1, RAG2 has not been found. Genes quite similar to RAG1, RAG2 have been found in sea urchins, but there again, there is no evolutionary descendant that links them to the vertebrates. And even if they were found, the problem is that the RAG1, RAG2 genes are only one component of a very complex system. Therefore, the research did not tell us how the immune system originated, as Dr. Miller was suggesting. In essence, Miller raised a straw man by misquoting Behe. He used a component of the system to represent the entire system and implied the research which helped to catalog the RAG gene element was actually proof that the evolution of the immune system had been solved. He even quotes Judge Jones in his book, Only a Theory. In quoting, he says, between 1996 and 2000, various studies confirmed each element of the evolutionary hypothesis explaining the origin of the immune system. That is, that period between 1996 and 2000 was a period in which the RAG gene was characterized as a transposable element. It wasn't proven how it actually got into the vertebrates. However, Miller gives no qualification to indicate that he knew the evidence had not even shown the origin of the RAG genes, let alone the origin of the immune system. But he had successfully pulled off the deception, and Judge Jones fell for it. I think any knowledgeable immunologist must realize that immunology was used at the trial to create a bluff to make it appears as if Darwinian evolution had solved the origin of the immune system, and actually nothing could be further from the truth. Basically, in conclusion, I would say the Kitzmiller-Dover trial was important for several reasons, but one that stands out to me is the way science was used to form an opinion about an important subject. And the truth was distorted and mixed with opinion, and Judge Jones was actually very carefully handled by the plaintiffs. I really think this debate needs to move back into the scientific arena and not the courts or the public media. As I read the literature just within the last 5 to 8 years, the research that's being done now in systems biology is revealing such a complexity of interactive regulatory systems that each organism has. You even look at the fruit fly. It's incredibly complex. And so I think the arguments for Darwinian evolution are going to have to evolve themselves. And I'm sure within the scientific community, they are already. When they start using terms as horizontal transfer or co-opting, these are not gradualistic systems that are part of the Darwinian theory. So I think Darwinism is evolving. I think what's important to realize that it's being held captive by a naturalistic philosophy. And I think as long as it is, it's not going to be able to think outside of the box and realize that the only real answers that are currently available are found in intelligent causes. And all we have to do is look around.
If you go back and look at the trial record, you'll find that Ken Miller misrepresented how we test irreducible complexity with respect to the origin of the bacterial flagellum. And he also misrepresented Michael Behe's arguments on the irreducible complexity of the blood clotting cascade. And we have done a lot of work documenting this over the last few years. So this sounds like this is just another example where basically Ken Miller misrepresented Behe's arguments and then sort of put forward this facade of evidence to the judge judge really being unwilling to engage the deeper questions that Behe was asking about the origin of the immune system.
Well, I think you're absolutely correct, Casey. The problem really is, and you see this whether it's in the public media, in the newspapers, or on other scientific issues that are out there, it's very difficult for the layperson to realize when they're being had. They don't have the background. And unfortunately, I think much of the scientific community is not willing to speak up for various reasons. There is a tremendous amount of peer pressure. So in the end, who gets hurt? Truth. Truth is being buried, and I think that's a real crime that we as scientists ought to cry out against.
Well, you're doing a service to all of us by helping us to understand what really happened during the Dover trial as regards the origin of the immune system. So, Dr. Ewert, thank you for your time. Thanks for coming on the show.
Well, you're welcome.
Well, I'm Casey Luskin with ID the Future. Thanks for listening.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute 2010. For more information, visit www.intelligentdesign.org or www.idthefuture.com.